Welcome to Hanks for the Memories. You've got a friend in us. This is episode 3, Bosom Buddies, season 2, from 1981 to 1982. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And with us today, back from last episode, our resident TV historian. Not resident historian, just flat, Mike, that's you, of course.
That's me.
But resident TV historian, resident sitcom historian, Mr. Brian Rodriguez of the High School Slumber Party Podcast. Hello, Brian.
I'm glad I finally got a residency.
You did well. We got John Harden as a resident Shakespeare expert, even though I've never talked to him in person or over the, or whatever. Mike's resident historian and also resident sports expert. And you are our resident sitcom expert. So there we go. Mike, you know, this is already getting off tangent on another, what's going to be another very long episode. But when we recorded our most recent episode of Too Fast, Too Forever, and when we were doing our Boy, Do We Have a Podcast for You, aka This Ain't No 10-Second Race, and you asked, do we have a buzzer? I got a buzzer sound, so now there's a buzzer.
Oh, sweet.
So because of you, we are there. We are recording this episode in person.
Hello.
At Cage Club HQ North.
Live and in living color, in front of a live studio audience.
Welcome to the new set.
We're not talking about in living color. We are talking about Bosom Buddies Season 2, a show that I wasn't sure if I enjoyed or not, and then when I was, like, I liked it. I had a fun enough time watching it.
Uh-huh.
But then when I was going through the episodes to pull screenshots, I was like, I kind of got, like, emotional. I was like, oh, I'm probably never going to see these characters again, because I'm not going to rewatch this show, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, like, I like Amy, I like Ruth, I like Isabel, mm-hmm. I like Sonny, I like Kip and Henry. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't, like, this is not my favorite show, but I enjoyed spending time with these characters, and I'm not going to do that again. And that's, it's a weird feeling to have.
I'm not sure if it was some kind of, like, hostage situation where I got accustomed
to my
It's a
little Stockholm syndrome,
It's
think,
a bit
sure.
like that, but, you know, I kind of like, I think I like this season more, or maybe it was just at the end of this stretch. I agree. Like, I kind of miss this show. Like, if I might show somebody an episode or two, it would probably be from this season. I just feel like they dressed up way more and they got way crazier and wackier and things just took off in a direction I wasn't expecting this season that I liked.
I mean, it definitely feels like the show that they wanted to make, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
And what you are feeling, especially Joey, what you said, is what viewers who actually enjoyed the show were feeling, because this wasn't the age of, you know, DVDs or Netflix. Mm-hmm. When a show was canceled, it was almost deleted from history. Now, yeah. Of course, it had a little bit of a revival because of Tom Hanks' career. But if Tom Hanks was not in the show, they would not have released it on DVD.
No, it's not like All in the Family or
no.
I Love Lucy or The Brady Bunch,
there
even.
There are so many sitcoms lost in time and space that only exists in, like, the vaults of these, like,
spin-offs of spin-offs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of things that people have never seen and probably will never see again until everything is just digitized and put somewhere and we have to pay for it. But, you know, when this show was gone, it was gone.
Yeah, we talked about it last episode, about how when he landed Splash and became, like, this star, they were like, oh, we should probably do something with this because we've got 37 episodes of varying quality, but 37 episodes of Tom Hanks just from a couple years ago, like, it's still current enough to be like, oh, check out all this other stuff that we can make money on, so absolutely.
And I read further into that because I was trying to find all the scholarship possible on this, and there's just not a lot. It's always just like Hanks, Hanks, Hanks. NBC bought the rights, and they did actually contact Hanks and Scolari and say, hey, would you want to make another season? But Hanks obviously was like, hey, my career's kind of taking off. And Peter Scolari had already been on Newhart. And he, you know, he got nominated for awards on Newhart. So
Bob Newhart had, like, some of the best shows on television. Like, each of his sitcoms were,
yeah.
like, one better than the next.
Absolutely. So, you know, he's like, I'm on something successful. I'm not the star, but I might as well just chill. And obviously, then, eventually, he wins an Emmy on The Girl's Guest Spot, which he even said was a fluke. But, like, I don't want to sleep on Scolari. I know this is a Hanks podcast.
No, he really showcases more in that. He's doing impressions. He's doing lots of stuff. He's stretching.
Juggling every episode.
There's a lot of, like, repeated beats here that I want to talk about.
So, Mike, I have a, before we get too much further, you mentioned it before, just now, and something that you want to, do you want to make an apology to the format of sitcoms? Because you had messaged me, Brian, when you were editing the last episode, which we were joined by Aislinn Addington, the Contenders podcast.
And she's missing today.
We couldn't afford her.
We could not afford her to fly her in. Patreon.com/CageClub.
Am I replacing her? Like, Thelma?
Just like we got rid of, I don't remember her
name. Oh, I see.
I can't remember her name.
We've swapped out some of the cast.
I'm doing a dual role as the guest and the guest.
But yeah, so Mike, you messaged us, you said, I kind of come off sounding like you hate sitcoms, and just now you're talking about, like, great sitcoms, so just like our Waking taking up an Reno apology tour. This is the first and last stop here on the sitcom apology tour.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about sitcoms and about how you don't actually hate them?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I have a prepared statement here. This isn't as...
Oh, I do. Here, read this.
I am reading this on my own volition. I was just...
A sound-minded body.
I just surprised myself a little bit about how sort of negative I came down on the format. I mean, there's definitely an art to it. I think the problem for me is, just recently, like, I've been way more of a movie man in general. I love my TV shows, and I just have not watched a lot of sitcoms recently. So I'm just out of touch with them in general. I will tell you, I've seen a lot of episodes of Two Broke Girls, and Amy actually gives me a bit of a Kat Denning sort of vibe in some of these episodes.
I could see that.
Banana Balls. That's from Thor the Dark World.
Yes. Mew Mew. I love that part. Yeah, I did grow up with sitcoms like Brady Bunch and all that. I mean, News Radio is one of the best shows ever. So like, Cheers. Look, I'm backtracking a little, trying to rewrite a little history.
Stop plugging Dancing on the Ceiling.
There's definitely good ones out there that I enjoyed, but I just don't when stuff like Big Bang Theory, that just discouraged me a lot.
It's hard to compare anything on network to anything elsewhere.
And anything from this day and age to anything 5 to 10 years ago, even. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, the rules of the shows have changed so much in general that it's really hard to put up something like Friends against even Big Bang Theory. So
I think it's not, you might have sounded like this, but I know you didn't mean it like that, but like, it bothers me, and this has nothing to do really with this, but like, when people are like, oh, I don't like sports, or I don't like rap music, or I don't like whatever, it's like, well, you can't just use a blank, I don't like sitcoms. It's, you didn't say that, but it's like, well, you might not like three-camera laugh track, but like, that's not the same show as Arrested Development. That's not the same show as The Good Place, which isn't like really a sitcom. Like, it's, there are all these different kinds, like, within a genre or a classification, there's a lot of breadth that just saying like, and you didn't say this, but just saying, somebody saying like, I don't like sitcoms, doesn't do justice to art.
No, right.
Anyway, apology accepted. Before we talk about the episodes, episode by episode, I have a question for you both. What's the better line, recurring line? Sunny, 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 sunny. Or, who is it?
I knew that was going to be the line. I wrote that down this time.
Because they're both said by Kip or Kip and Henry a lot, but they're also both repeated by other characters in situations where it's a punchline, like, you know, Hank's dad says sunny, 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 or, you know, when they're in other places, they'll use the who is it line or whatever.
Amy a lot does the who is it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they're both sort of core to the show's DNA, but do you have a preference between those two?
I almost wish Scolari said who is it and Hanks had the sunny sun. You know, and I almost wish they each had one.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, I'm going, especially at the end of this season, I'm with the who is it, because they're both doing it together.
Yeah, so I'll agree there. I mean, again, and like you're saying, classic sitcom thing to have repeated catchphrases. You have to have a catchphrase. Every sitcom, probably, even now in the sitcoms, try to have a catchphrase, as dated as that is.
I mentioned Friends, like a show I didn't watch a lot of, but I know Joey's catchphrase is, how you doing?
How you doing?
You know,
and
that's
like, the most famous one.
It's so basic, and like, that's why they work.
Every one of the characters, though, believe it or not, has a catchphrase.
Yeah, like Rachel's is like, hey, look at my haircut. It's the Rachel, right? That she says every episode, right?
Yeah, what are
exactly.
they? Huh? Can you give me one or two?
Ross in like the first 5 seasons.
We were on a break.
No, yeah, that later becomes like the catchphrase.
Great impression.
But the first 5 seasons, he answers, hi.
Oh, really?
Wait, his catchphrase is just hi?
Like, he's like depressed and high.
Oh,
not,
wow.
Like, he's not high on drugs. You know,
no, I hear
he's
you.
He's saying hi. Chandler. The first 5 seasons.
I know Chandler's. Could you be?
Yeah. Could you
whatever,
be anymore?
Anymore, whatever. Yeah.
But even, that even like translates today, like with Chris Traeger literally.
Yeah.
Saying literally.
It's something they still do.
Or
it's
iconic, as it were.
Well, I do it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's catchy. It's memorable.
I also do think, though, Mike, that it's not necessarily a clear delineation down the middle, but I do feel like the first season where Hanks was more sort of starstruck by Sunny, he said that a lot more. Didn't really come around this because he's sort of more comfortable around her, especially in the first episode, which we'll talk about, where he reveals himself.
So many thoughts about their
relationship. But then in season two, like, there's still... It's this weird, like, even the who is it doesn't really mean as much the second season, because, like, the only people who are really entering their apartment, other than grandfather, you know, are people who know that they're the men. So they don't really need to hide it. But, like, that also comes back, like, when they're in the cabin and they hear a knock on the door and they say that, they're like, wait, what are we doing?
It's habit, yeah.
But yeah, so any other sort of high-level thoughts about the show before we get into episode by episode?
Oh, tons. Most of my thoughts are high-level because I'm a professor of sitcom.
You're so smart.
Well, I mean, right off the bat, their new job. Like, I thought that was really smart.
That 60 seconds.
It's the second episode where they buy out Henry's uncle, who has a studio and they go into business for themselves. Like, yep. I thought that was great. I really liked that we were going to, I thought that opened a lot of new doors.
Yes, it did. And I'm happy about that. But whenever you do that, you have problems. This did not feel like season two to me. This felt like season four to me or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because they were taking a lot of chances that shows with more of a rapport take. And one of the things that I noticed, and there's two of them. So I don't. Are you guys familiar with the Parks and the Recreation?
I am familiar
the
with the Parks
television
and the
program. Yes, I've
well,
seen
well, there's
episode.
A new like sitcom term that comes out of that, and it's called the Ann Perkins character. The Ann Perkins character was a character who had a role at the beginning, and they kind of have to start creating new roles for at the end as the show evolves.
I call this the Showtime problem, where Showtime has had every show that they've aired the last, like, say, 15 years run for 8 seasons when it should have run for 3 or 4. Like, the first 3 seasons of Weeds, I think, is a great example. The first 3 seasons of Weeds are, like, great. And at the end of season 3, like, Agrestic, the little boxes town that they live in, burns down. And, like, that, in theory, could or should be the end of the series, but then they move and it sort of becomes other things. And then Kevin Nealon's character, who they love, doesn't have any reason to be around, but they don't want to get rid of him.
Exactly.
So it's the same thing. It's
exactly.
Yeah, she was, like, a nurse, and then she was working at the Parks and Rec.
Yeah, it was because they wanted to build that park, right? So, and once like that became downplayed, it was like, oh, let's give her a job in City Hall. But why is she in the Parks Department the whole time? You know, oh, because she's dating this guy, she's doing that or doing this. You know, like, and this happens kind of in the show with
Ruth.
Ruth, for sure. Oh, like, oh, she bought into the business, but
Ruth
she's
Dunbar.
Hanging out here all the time, you know? Yeah. And even, like, in later episodes, like, Isabel's, like, hanging out at the work, too, when she should be running the... You know,
true.
She complains in one episode, like, oh, I don't have enough time for my career. Why hanging out with everyone else like, at their
yeah.
job?
Yeah.
It's something that kind of hilarious in sitcoms that always happens as it evolves. Sure. That's why I felt like it feels like more of a season four, that we're seeing it all in a row. But if you saw this once a week, we are not really getting the character development that we probably should for longevity. And I kind of believe that they knew they were going to get canceled. So they were more like, let's just do the things we wanted to do here.
Right.
Yeah. I feel almost like it's a redo of the first season in a lot of ways because their job is basically the same job they had at the ad agency. They're dealing with clients and they're pitching them commercials and stuff, only that we're going to get to see them act out and pitch those commercials
even deeper.
Yeah,
because they don't hire actors ever.
Right, that they act out in all their commercials, which is insane, but I love that concept. Yeah, I felt like it was still the same show, but we were just hanging out at a different location, but we definitely get way less of the cross-dressing, and we're hanging out in the like lobby of the hotel.
I expected
way
less, though, even of the cross-dressing from how we ended the show last week. It seemed like we, you know, we might not even gotten it at all.
Because we go like one or two episodes again without even them dressing up, so I thought maybe by the end or halfway through the season that because they can, they would have afforded to move out on their own. Like, why didn't Kip and Sonny get their own apartment, you know? I mean, I understand he loves Henry as a friend, but they see each other every day at work. They co-run a business with all their friends.
So that's the other thing. I think there's it falls into the kind of sitcom conventions of, like, we can't really shake things up too much. But, you know, they're staying at this apartment because it's the only one they can afford. It's $150 a month or whatever. But later, one of the episodes is about how Henry says Kip is irresponsible with money. And he's like, here's your weekly salary. And it's like $275. I'm like, if they're making $500 combined a week, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're bringing $2,000. The only apartment they can afford is the $150 one where in a building where they have to dress like women. Like, it's all sort of like they're still living together because that's what the show
yes.
is.
Yes. And part of it this time around, I kind of came to appreciate those constraints that they're sort of there's rules and there's a certain jail to a show that you can never escape from. And part of the fun of season two for me became not only how are they retooling this, but how are they keeping this going? You know, I think an example is Sonny and Kip's relationship. I never get a sense of what page we're on there. Even though they're supposedly together, it's unclear if or how many times they've actually had sex.
Maybe never.
I mean, it's implied at the end of the first episode we're back where it ends over the closing credits with a train crash, which Hitchcock used the train going through a tunnel to symbolize it. But like that's symbolizing they're about to bone, the two trains crashing. But down the line, there's several episodes where it's like they haven't slept together.
Yeah.
They haven't, like, they've barely made out.
And
like,
what's weird, a little bit weird, is that the DVD order of the episodes is different than the order they aired in. So there's the two...
Which was not uncommon back in the day.
So I don't know what the correct order is, but one of the last episodes, Sonny's like, you know, I don't want to ruin our relationship by having sex or whatever. I'm like, you've been together for this entire season. What are you doing? I understand it's like a different time, and you know what, but like still, it's like even out of order, it makes even less sense. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, What?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, based on his, I mean, it's, I know it's hammed up and it's cartoonish for the sake of the show, but, like, Tom Hanks is not going to rest until he has sex with Sonny. And, like, if she's able to, like, keep him off for, like, an entire year of TV, like, that's...
Which makes it even weirder when, we'll get to it, the episode where he cheats on Sonny. Like, where is that coming terrible. From?
What I got thoughts on that, too.
Yeah, and we'll get to that episode.
I know we will, but I just had to, you know,
I actually think Sonny was better in season one than in season two, because a lot of the episodes, she just, like, in this weird world existing.
I think it also kind of, and this is more of a sitcom thing in general, where, like, over time, and this also happens really fast, but over time, you kind of, unless you're the main character, you kind of get boiled down to your stereotypes, and so she's just, like, her definition is the hot one who is dating Tom Hanks. She's no longer a dancer, she's barely a nurse, she's not an aspiring model or an actress, you know what I mean? It's just, like, this is who she is, and then because she's around, she's able to be on their commercials and everything they pitch, but that feels more like she's a friend as opposed to an aspiring actress.
Yeah, because everyone else they know is on their commercials, and she's not doing it. Yeah, like you said, she's not an actress. She's just
I wish there was just one episode where they literally hired her to be the spokesperson for their company or something, so that she would be the person in every commercial they do.
Well, which we talked about in the last episode, because there was the one episode, the dancing episode, where they hire her.
Yes.
But you just, like, hire your friend. Like, don't hire her because you're going to sleep with her. Or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
another thing that's kind of discouraging is that Donna Dixon, she's great. Like, she's so good. And, like, everyone's really good in the show, but, like, she's elevating this material. And, like, I was surprised, like, they hired her, obviously, to be the ditzy blonde. But, like, this actress is, like, pulling off some, like, pretty sophisticated, like, they all are pulling off some really sophisticated timing this season, I felt.
And the weird thing happened to this show, because there was almost more episodes focused on other characters in the first season.
Yeah.
And then, like, this one's more about the buddies, which is fine and everything, but it's usually the other way in shows, if that makes sense. They usually, like, start out with the core characters, and then they start, you know, we'll talk about Parks and Recreation. You know, later, if you watch season one or even season two, it's inconceivable to think that there'll be Jerry episodes later in the show.
Or even a Tom episode.
Yeah, even then, because they're just, like, big characters. And this show almost did the opposite in the two seasons. Like, they focused on the buddies.
That's a good call. But I actually kind of like how they showed more of their life together. Like, we get high school, we get college, we get the future.
Interesting.
I think that has to do with what you were saying, that, like, if they got the sense they were going to get canceled, because I don't remember exactly what it was on the, like, verbatim on the wiki, but it was basically, like, they didn't even know if they're going to make it through the entire first season, then they got the second season order, and then, like, that was all, like, this whole rocky thing. So I feel like you're right in that, like, if they don't know from week to week if they're going to survive, they might as well do, like, I brought this up, so this, I sent this to Mike. This is the write-up of the season on CageClub.me. Talk about a season in which Kip and Henry open their own business, relive their high school years, nearly die, gamble away a fortune in Monte Carlo, water balloon Richard Nixon's car, date a Satanist, aid the mob, fake Hildy's death, and nearly die again. And it's like, okay, like, these are all insane things, and these are all, like, back-to-back episodes. It's like, they just almost died, like, a little bit ago, and now you're gonna have them almost die again? Like, oh, that's a third time! Because they also fall down the elevator, they fall out the window, they almost die in the cabin.
That's why it feels like a later season of a show, because usually in later seasons, people try shit, or they even get cocky, and they're like, oh, let's experiment a little bit. Not season twos are usually, let's develop the characters a little bit more.
Once they got past episode one of season two, which it feels like a major benchmark, and they're like, okay, if we can make that episode work, we could kind of blow the barn doors off of this show and go wherever we want to go. And I feel like that's what they did. They're like, all right, we're out of that situation where they have to be secretly women in front of their friends, okay? We're in the clear there. Let's push everything else in another direction. And I feel like they do. They get really wacky and goofy, and they but they do a lot more things you see in every other sitcom, like visiting them as kids, seeing what their parents are like. You know, we see Kip's parents, we see Henry's sister. They really, you know, they end up in the hospital together. They bicker a lot. Like, they really go into doing, like, much more by the books sort of sitcom this
time. You know, all the stuff in the magic box of gimmicks they open, and they're like, let's do this.
And then there's a couple episodes where they put their own twist of ending it on, like, real downers.
Oh,
of, like,
I have
getting real about
it. Yeah, and we'll talk about that, because I was just like, I was like, it's comedy, and then, like, yeah, I'm afraid to grow up. It's like, what is what? Where did that come from?
And that then, like, is the bosom
they play,
touch.
And then they play, like, the sad sound, and then, like, they go to, like, the commercial break, and then they come back with, like, a joke tag. I'm just like, what? Okay, so let's go through this, because there's a lot of things I want to talk about based on what we said. So the first episode, The Truth and Other Lies. Kip decides to take his relationship with Sonny to the next level by revealing that he and Buffy are the same person. My first note about this is that this looks like a cheaper show to make. Like, the lighting looks worse.
Yeah.
It looks like they're like, okay, because I think the first season they talked about on the wiki, that I think we even talked about in the last episode, where they were like, we couldn't believe how much money we had to do to spend each episode, and how little oversight there was. Like, it's almost like they're like, oh, we're like kids in a candy store and no one can cares what we did. And then the second season, they're like, okay, cool. Here's a tenth of your budget. Go do the same show. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. The cutaways, even especially in the first one, they are supposed to be in New York. Literally, they're so California. One even has the California flag, like waving proudly in it.
Really?
They're cutting outside. And I'm like, whatever was around like the cutting room, like outside shot, just put it in.
Because later episodes have very grainy footage of New York that was like from a Rockford file or something, like different, definitely from a different show.
We'll talk about the grandparent episode, but that exterior shot of the mansion is like from the
50s. That's great.
This is the episode where we find out that Lily, the apartment, the building manager, is engaged to a native somewhere and it's not going to come back.
Okay.
So Isabel takes over.
Which was a little bit teased in the last season.
Yes.
I noticed this time it's basically the Hanks show from this episode. It's like they really focused on Tom Hanks. I don't know if that's just because it was a Kip-centric episode or not, but I was like, they know what the bank on. They're focusing on Hanks.
So they come back from a date, and this is like in the first episode, Sonny's basically like, okay, cool, let's go to your place and have sex. And he's just like, I live in a motel, let's go to a motel. And then that's where she's like, I think something's up with him. And then they go to the gala, and he's talking to Henry. He's like, I need to do this. And Henry's like, okay, cool, like bring her somewhere special or whatever. And like let her know, and he turns around and Hanks is already backstage slowly taking off his dress and his wig to reveal that he's Kip.
Yes.
In a dress without bosoms, just his, like, you know, his hairy upper chest. And I, like, again, praising Donna Dixon, like her motionless reaction, just like, I don't know what to do with this. Where she's, you know, the character is betrayed and confused and hurt and confused, and she's just like, what? And then
it's awkward. I did laugh really hard at one point though, because she walks out and Henry pulls his wig off too and is like, I'm sorry, Sonny, I'm sorry.
And then
she walks over to Amy and pulls Amy's hair, and that alleviated the tension in my room while I was watching it, because I was like, this isn't funny, this is super awkward, I don't know where you go with this. And then so thank goodness it ended on a laugh there to get us out.
This is the same one with the embassy party?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought this was like a first signal in this season too that they take some chances with like ethnic stereotypes this season that they didn't as much last season. Nothing I personally found super, super offensive, but I thought they made some interesting.
Well, there's this. There's the Monte Carlo stuff. Yeah. There's Ernie Hudson in prison. Where yes. Just like
Ernie Hudson.
You know.
Yeah, I don't think I didn't find it offensive at all. It wasn't something that where I was appalled.
Right.
But I thought
right.
They took a lot of chances, even gay stuff too.
It feels more of like a cartoon this season in that regard. You know, because they're falling off of buildings and everything, like, you know, I mean, just, they're falling down elevator shafts, like just in general, and they're dressing up way more, and you know, costumes and stuff like that for their commercials. Just in general, it felt more like I was watching like a live action cartoon, like a Looney Tunes thing.
That's
and
right, yeah.
And so you just needed very quick, you know, symbols to be like, all right, that's this character, that's that character. So like when we're in Monte Carlo, we need to know that like this is a general or like something like that.
Yeah. So the big thing we're talking about in the last episode is how are they going to convince these women to not hate them, but also that like it's okay because, you know, they've been confiding in them and all this different stuff. So Amy obviously knew because Amy was in on it from the beginning. The last one that convinces Ruth, but Ruth basically says something like, I've put on a lot of crazy costumes too, who am I to judge? Isabel's kind of makes the most sense in that she's like, I can't look like a fool to the residents, so like I can't look bad, so you might as well keep this up, and also I like you guys or whatever. The Sonny one, I feel like this is, again, like we were talking last episode about how when Henry's mom finds out that he's dressing as a woman and it sort of feels like too quick of a reversal, this also sort of feels like we need to resolve this in this episode. But Hanks is like, no, I'm doing this because I love you. And then she's like, the quote is, you love me, you were wearing a dress for over a year because you love me. And then they passionately embrace, and then that's when we see the fireworks and the trains colliding. And then she says, you sure go out of your way to impress a girl. And it just, I feel like that cheapens her character in that she was betrayed. I was especially talking about in the last episode, but that episode early on where she stays over with them, right? And
yes.
like these are her girlfriends in theory, but in reality, it's the guy who wants to get in her pants.
Yeah.
And here we are resolved in like 90 seconds. And now, you know, she's still, I guess, sort of kind of on the fence about whether she's going to date Kip, but like this is all behind them. And it's like, well, that happened a little too fast, but you know, whatever.
It has to happen in one episode is the problem. Like, I wish it could have been a two-parter, a very special two-parter first episode
of the
season. Or take
this season for her sorting it out.
That would be ideal. They'd do that now, but they would never have, like, an arc for a secondary
right.
character kind of like that. I mean, there's no arcs whatsoever in this series.
It would have been
so.
More interesting than what they gave her to do anyway, you know what I mean? So.
Totally, yeah, but I agree with you. Like, that's why after the first episode and that sort of issue is dealt with for the show's sake and everything. Yeah. I'm kind of like, good, let me just get on with this show. I'm trying to put it out of my mind.
And I
mind.
Think that's what they were thinking too. And then the rest of it just becomes, again, we'll say this again, like just fast food. Different meals every week.
The second episode, There's No Business. You mentioned this before, Mike. This is when Kip and Henry buy their own commercial production house from an unscrupulous salesman.
I couldn't believe it that they were going to switch up the format that much, that they were going to become their own bosses, have their own job, and leave the ad agency.
You talked about in the first episode that you're like, I think the end goal of this lasted 4 or 5 seasons that Amy is running the ad agency. And like, not only is Amy not running the ad agency, but like, we don't even give a shit about the ad agency anymore. You know what I mean? Like, they're all gone. Like, and Ruth becomes an investor in this, like, so she has a reason to hang around. It's just like, but there's also the episode where they really want to buy the T-note, but then, you know, Henry gives the money, and they buy this instead, which I thought was sort of interesting. Why later in the season there's the episode where like Henry thinks that Kip is really bad with money. I'm like, well, you know, you kind of screwed the pooch here first. You know what I mean?
And then they use footage of them putting up the sign for the new intro.
Yeah, yep. But it happens before we see it.
Yeah, I know. So
well, okay.
A little foreshadowing.
I want to be clear, but I don't know if I said this already. Just maybe you guys know, but just for your audience, the cuts we're seeing are not the cuts that were shown on TV. We're seeing syndication cuts. So when a show is bought in syndication, not so much now because people fucking know what happens in shows. Up until like at least 10, 15 years ago, when something went into syndication, whoever bought the syndication rights would cut it their own way. That's why the episodes are rearranged, because whoever decided on...
was like, this is the better order.
Was like, yeah, let's order it this way instead. The DVD cuts are usually, especially for something like this, where there's not like a huge cult following, man, I need the regular order, or I'm missing this scene.
No Billy Joel
song. It's not Star Wars where you need the D special effects ones. Guys, I need the original bosom.
But there's a
so
message
tired
board.
George Lucas fucking with my bosom buddies.
I saw a message board of people like who were really into the show talking about this, and they're like, yeah, there have been a couple scenes that were cut in syndication, but they weren't for like because they didn't like them. A lot of them had like people singing songs that they didn't get the rights to.
Licensing rights.
Just things to make it cheaper.
Yeah.
Okay. So like that beginning credits might just be the beginning credits they cut together, because it's not even the original song. So
well, that's true.
Okay.
So is that Henry gets scammed into buying his Uncle Mort's production studio. They got to come up with $17,000 to keep the studio. And this is where Ruth, in a really cool, strong, powerful moment, is just like, she comes in and Uncle Mortar, the guy or whoever is like, whoever owns the studio, basically calls her a prostitute or a hooker or whatever, and like, you know, I'll give you $20 or whatever.
Yeah, the guy holding them up, yeah.
Yeah, and she says, what you just offered me $20 for, I just did to you for $17,000.
Great.
Where she's just like,
line.
I just fucked you, dude. Like,
big dick.
Get out of my life. Exactly.
Huge.
Big dick energy for sure. The episode ends with Hanks on his first infomercial, which I thought was cool. I think, you know, I love that this gives them the ability, like the first season, they had the ability to do like weird ad campaigns or stuff, but we sort of saw like the making of and not the production. Here, it's like, oh, we've got a giant pencil for some reason. Like, let's figure out a way to do like a production sketch about this. You know what I mean? Or I want to have them dress in new wave clothes. So like, we have these outfits around. So like, they just have to impress a client with it. Like, so I just feel like this opens up a new world of possibilities for visual gags and stuff.
Definitely what they were going for.
Mm-hmm. The next episode, The Reunion. At a reunion of students from his old high school, Henry meets a deaf girl and recalls how badly he treated her on prom night. And my big issue with this is that their reunion for their high school in Ohio is being held at the Susan B. Anthony Hotel in New York.
That's amazing.
Why?
Okay, like a lot of colleges have reunions in New York because a lot of alumni go to New York, right? Or like just end up moving to New York. But not for a high school.
No.
Makes no sense. And then they get unlimited guests. You know, it's another like, let's force this situation there.
But you have to do the high school reunion episode at some point, right? So I'm glad they did.
But they could have just flashed back to high school.
Well, I'm glad. Well, that's the best part is the high school flashback stuff.
Or you could do like you could essentially shoot it in that same restaurant. Be like, have a scene like we're going to Ohio for the weekend or whatever, and then like have them go, and then like, you know what I mean? Like, but it's very clearly the Susan B. Anthony Hotel, and like Isabel is there. Like, there's no reason.
I didn't have as much issue. I thought that was kind of funny, not to bring it up, but like what bothered me was the way Henry is acting in this episode. It is so bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, who acts like that? Like, I understand, you know, the idea like, oh, you tell a white lie because you don't want to go to the prom with the girl and stuff. But when you see her 15 years later,
you run away.
You do the same thing. You just run away from her. I don't know. That was so bizarre to me.
I mean, look, these episodes are just conceived. Not like with that. It's just like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could get a Hanks and Scolari? And like, what would they look like in high school?
Yes.
Let's start from here.
But at least have Henry act like Henry.
He's a nerdy hall monitor, yeah.
He's not someone who would ignore, you know, someone trying to have a conversation with him, especially.
It was almost more of like Kip's thing. Like, Kip would be a jerk to a girl like that more than Henry, you know?
Because Kip is, I mean, they're both shallow.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll say they're both shallow, but if we're comparing them to men at the time, they're not as far off.
Oh, sure, but I'm just saying, you know, I don't think it's out of line. Like, you know, Kip might be more likely to rebuff a girl because she's deaf, but I also think that, like, it's not crazy for Henry to rebuff her either, because even if he's just a nerdy dude, he still has these aspirations. Like, you know, the whole first season where he's like,
yeah,
I don't want to date Amy because she's not
fair,
my vision of beauty or whatever.
No,
you know what
that's
I mean?
Right, yeah. I just thought he was more of a more decent human being than that, because he came off really cold.
What's actually kind of weird is that this past week, as we're recording this, the episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine was where Jake and Gina go back to their high school reunion, and Gina's there to, like, lie about... I mean, I guess it's a sitcom trope where it's, like, they're going to lie about, like, how successful they are or whatever.
Yeah.
And so this is where Kip is going to, like, lie and, like, talk about, like, how he's married to Sunny or whatever.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then Sunny, like after, like, one time, is like, I've had enough of this bullshit. And just starts, like, throwing wrenches in the narrative and stuff like that. I thought that was really funny. But, I mean, I love that we get Hanks as, a free-loving hippie.
That was
which,
great.
Which, you know, I'm sure that we're going to have more stuff set back in the past, especially, you know, who knows, but I know that Forrest Gump takes a little bit in terms of that era, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know, we'll see. Next episode, one for you, one for me. After berating Kip for... Oh, this is one that was put late on the DVD. Like, episode 18 or 19 or whatever. After berating Kip for being irresponsible with money, Henry buys a stolen VCR and is thrown in jail.
Oh, so... Okay, so you're going in the order of...
Of which...
You're going
in... The air date.
Right? Yeah. Oh, wow. This is the Ernie Hudson one. Okay.
It is the Ernie Hudson one. And this is where my first note, because it was so late in the season in terms of what we were watching. So Kip and Sunny still haven't had sex? Then I realized, oh, that's because... I don't know.
That's just because of standards and practices, probably, where it's like, we can't say they had sex, but we can say they haven't had sex. Like, we could say sex on the show, but it has to be in a certain way. I don't know.
This is an episode where Hanks and Sonny, Kip and Sonny, go away for the weekend to the skiing.
That tripped me up, too, because Scolari and Hanks had already gone skiing in the cabin and almost died.
Yeah, so this was before, yeah.
So this was like, I was like, are they talking about the trip they're going to take? Oh, no, this is another ski trip. Okay.
One thing I thought was really weird was that how thirsty, to use a modern day word for what wouldn't have been back then, like how thirsty Amy is for Henry, that when Hanks rips off, or Kip rips off his towel, is that like leopard print underwear on,
oh, yeah.
He gets grossed out? I was like, how is this not like the ooga ooga, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is what you want, right? And then she's like, ew, and she runs out of the apartment. You know what I mean? So.
Well, because I don't think it works for him. I'll put it that way.
Well, how about Henry getting arrested because the cop just like wanders into the studio and he's like, your name Henry?
Yeah.
And he's like, I thought so. That item you bought was hot.
Well, because he mailed in the warranty card because he knew the address and everything. You know what I mean? But like,
but a man,
that feels
remember...
like due diligence to a greater extent that is crazy.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, don't prosecute that guy.
But did he even know that he was buying a hot item?
No, because he thought it was a bargain.
Exactly. So
that's what. Cause
yeah,
this
and
is
they
where,
wouldn't just throw you in
and they
jail.
Wouldn't arrest you for buying a hot item.
I mean, like Nicolas Cage bought that stolen dinosaur skull and just had to return it. Like,
exactly.
That was, you know, that was it.
So. Yeah.
It wasn't his fault. Like, he just bought it. But you said Ernie Hudson's in this episode, he shamelessly hits on Isabel when she first shows up.
Yeah.
He's like, I hope this is a conjugal visit. It's like, well, I mean, come on, dude. Like,
I didn't realize Ernie Hudson was that built.
Yeah, well, this is like right before Ghostbusters, right? No mustache or any of that. It looks
no
really
hair.
Young.
This also has one of the weirdest endings to an episode, I think, all in the entire show, where, like, Kip comes back and he's going to bail him out. And then he's wanted because Henry put his name on the warranty, too. So he goes in jail. And the episode ends with Kip bailing himself out and being like, well, bye.
Yeah, and Henry's still in jail.
Still in jail.
Yeah. End of episode.
It's just like, what? And then like the post-credit tag is that Kip is upset that Sunny wanted to ski all weekend instead of, you know, being that romantic kind of getaway. I guess sort of, this is a little bit of a shout-out to all the girls I loved before. They had that ski trip too, right?
Yeah,
so, no hot tub weekend, I guess.
We got that. We got a high school episode, so I was enjoying this season.
The Road to Monte Carlo, a near-death experience leaves Kip and Henry with a big insurance settlement, which they use to take a trip to Monte Carlo. This is the first of three episodes where they almost die.
Right,
it's
the elevator shaft.
Yes. And they're basically, you know, looking through their life's regrets, like, what have they done? They feel like they haven't lived life.
So this episode was the first one, and there's a couple this season where I was like, these feel not off, but different than typical sitcom structures, like three-act things, because it's like it's more of like an old Simpson episode where, like, the first act actually was like a mini-act that set up the rest of the story, and then act two and three play out the rest of it, and we end somewhere I never would have imagined by going to like Monte Carlo and gambling the money away. So I thought that like this and a couple other episodes this season tried to break structure for better or worse, and for worse, you know, being an episode where Henry is left in jail by the end of the episode because they haven't resolved that act or anything. But
yeah, what's the side plot with the girls, Amy and Isabel?
They go to Hoboken to Amy's mom's
Hoboken,
house.
Hoboken, that's why I wanted to remember.
Oh my gosh.
They go to Hoboken to Amy's
mom's totally
house. Amy calls it Hoboken or something.
Yeah, Hoboken. Like that. Yeah, that's what I wanted to mention. I knew there was something else in that episode. And then the Monte Carlo, we get a special guest star that I pointed out.
Joey Zaza
from the Third Time the Charm classic episode, Godfather 3.
One of the Hall of Fame episodes.
Starring Domino. Was Princess Diana supposed to be in this episode? There's like a, I think, because they see somebody walk by and they're like, is that
Lady Di?
I think so.
Joke? I don't know.
Is that, okay, I was going to ask, like, who are they trying to say?
I think it was
that...
her. I don't know. Again, I have a bad sense of history, but I think that's who it was supposed to be. So the dumbest thing in this whole episode, I guess it's one of those like sitcom tropes where like we kind of have to reset to zero at the end of every episode, but they win money, they win money, they win money, they win money. And then they're like, all right, cool. We're going to bet half on black and half on red. And I was like, why?
Fast Five.
Right. But like, worst case, which happens to them, you lose all your money. Best case, you still have the same amount of money you had before.
It doesn't make sense.
It's zero win and like a 2% loss, and they lose. So
yeah, it makes
it's terrible.
It makes zero sense.
But yes, it's a Rico and Tego thing, definitely, from the end of Fast Five.
Well, that's why I was like, why are they going to Monte Carlo? Why aren't they just going to Vegas or AC or something like that? And it kind of feels like written by someone who's never been to Vegas or AC or Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo isn't just like a room
with one of each game.
Yeah, one of each game.
Here's our poker table. Here's our blackjack table. Here's our keno table.
It reeked to me of like someone writing about something they have no idea what they're kind of writing
about. No, and even at the time, to fly to Monte Carlo and stay there, they did not have enough money to do and then gamble and come back.
Yeah, you would just go to AC for the night because they're in New York City.
Yeah. The next episode doesn't make a whole lot more sense. Water balloon gate. Kip and Henry drop a water balloon in a car that turns out to belong to Richard Nixon. After being questioned by the Secret Service, Kip is so shaken that he gives up practical jokes. And this is one where, like, they're obviously, like, goofy guys who joke around, but I was just like, why is Henry an idiot in this episode? Like, everything is a joke. Like, everything. He's just like, Kip is just trying to have a conversation, and Henry's, like, doing, like, he's basically, like, buzzer on his hand, whoopee cushion, like, it's, like every, like,
squirting
stupid...
flower, everything
yeah, exactly.
Ready.
Like, my flower, it's just, like, it's like...
Well, they really had to hammer home how serious Kip wants to get, because, you know, in general, Kip, you know, just to look at Hanks and stuff, like, he makes you laugh, he makes you smile, he's a fun-loving, high-energy kind of guy. So, like, they could only tone him down so much that they had to beef up Henry and make him bigger so that Hanks felt more serious. That's what I was thinking.
I also wish that this was the other way around, because we're watching it for Hanks, and to see Hanks be the straight man was, like, boring.
That was weird, too, because I didn't feel like Kip would, you know, cotton to authority like that.
It's kind of Captain America Civil War. It's like, wait, why is Tony is aligned with the law and Cap is the bad guy?
I did love, though, that the Nixon shout out, like, I just thought that was so bizarre, just the idea that it was Nixon's car and everything. Nixon used to live like pretty close to here,
pretty close to Cage Club Studio.
This has one of my favorite visual elements of any episode, which is where they're playing football in full pads in the out in the office, and Amy, and Amy sneaks in to hear the signs, and she's like underneath them. So I like that a lot. I feel like Amy is the most consistently written character, for better or worse. Like, I feel like they know who she is.
Yeah, but I feel like there's no real. Like, we got those special moments in season one with Amy and Kip that you think that maybe he'll come around. And do you really get any of that in season two? Well, as we'll learn, even if you are a couple, it doesn't matter in this show.
Well, there's also the flash forward, right? Where there's the where they envision themselves as senior citizens, and in that world, they're together. To what extent they're together, who knows? They talk about President Travolta. They say just say Senator Desmond, but then she like answers the question. I think she was the senator.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
And he's like her first lady. The next episode is a very significant one for the arc, the character arc of this show. All You Need Is Love. Depressed after breaking up with another girlfriend, Stephanie Kramer, Henry goes into a video dating service where he meets a beautiful Satanist played by the future Mrs. Tom Hanks, Rita Wilson.
Rita Wilson.
Yeah, and she's also going to be on the film Volunteers, which is where I thought they first met.
So the story, and I read this either on IMDb or Wiki, is that they met here, and they kind of like had a crush on each other, but they were both dating other people, and they're like,
married.
We can't do anything. They were
Hanks was married.
Oh, Hanks was married?
Married, yeah.
So they were both, you know, with other people, and then when they re-met again a couple years later, they were both single, and they're like, okay, now we can do this or whatever.
Brian's Gossip Corner. Tom Hanks got married to his high school sweetheart, and he had, like, Colin Hanks at, like, 20. So they're only, like, 20 years apart.
And he's
which
grown
is why
up
they
to look
exactly the
just
same.
Like
yes.
him, yeah. So someone else that's going to reteam with Hanks from Bosom Buddies Season 1, Adrian Zemed, is in Bachelor Party. They're best friends in that movie. So.
Cool. So this is one where... So this was, again, like, you know, this is something that feels terrible characterization of the woman that Henry's dating, that they've been dating for 3 weeks, yeah. Which in the scope of this movie, in the show, apparently Kip and Sunny could be dating for months and months and months and never have sex. But in these 3 weeks, this woman becomes so obsessed with Henry that when he's like, we need to move on, which again, if you're serious for 3 weeks and like that you're having conversations, like it feels weird all around.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But she was so distraught that she like loses her mind. And then there's like he says something about like, basically, it's not this, but like how great she is in bed or whatever. And like, every guy in the restaurant gets up and like waits for her to come out of the bathroom. And then she, you know, she meets a new guy and she's fine. But I was like, this feels lazy and not good.
No, you know what this episode was? This was a showcase episode for the new sensation that was sweeping America, video dating. This is about video dating services and exploiting all of that and everything. This is how people, before there was an internet, lots of people met like this.
In person, that's unnatural.
I love that, because that's like, that would be a funny line today in any show.
Yeah, well, this could be on like the Two Broke Girls. They could do the same episode, but it would be a Tinder episode or something.
You know, it makes me think, right? Like, you could have a podcast just on high school reunion flashback sitcom episodes. You could have, like, every sitcom has at least one of these episodes.
Boring that, like,
no, of course. I'm not saying you should.
Like, I feel bad for you sometimes when, like, you watch a movie that feels like it should be a brand new movie, and it's like the same four or five beats that you've covered in four or five other movies.
Pretty much most
of them. Just a
new package, a new cover.
Which I don't mind. But like something like that, like again, every show is going to have that episode. How did we? Oh, we actually knew each other many years past. Like, I don't think this one had it, but like every show that goes long will have that. Like, oh, you bumped into this character 10 years before we thought we knew you. You know.
Well, it's like basically though they do that in college when they get recruited by Ruth.
You're right.
Like that is the moment where it's like they knew Ruth back then.
And I guess that sort of makes sense because they're not supposed to be really like, you know, young. Like that's probably their first job out of college. Whatever. But it still feels like, oh, okay. In this episode. Rita Wilson is dating applicant number 666.
I didn't catch that.
Henry calls her Candy Ears. That's his nickname for her. And the only other note that I have here is that at the end of the episode, they're in their Buffy and Hildy outfits walking out of the Susan B. Anthony, and there's a priest there sort of giving them shit for some reason, and Hank just goes, hey guy, we're dudes, and like just pulls his wig off. And I was like, that's a weird...
That was actually kind of a funny moment.
Because... I like that. It was like a weird, like a... It's a joke now that they can reveal themselves.
So why was that? Was Isabel trying to show him, like, I can run the Susan B. Anthony, like, there's no funny business, like, men aren't allowed upstairs, and then in come Hanks, and he's talking about a relationship, being in a relationship with a woman, dressed as a woman, and the Padre is like, oh, wait, like, I'm hip, I'm cool, like, let me listen.
Yeah,
I still didn't get the motivation.
No, but it felt like they were trying to make a progressive joke of some kind, where they're just like,
he's like, we're non-dominated.
Non-denominational, like whatever your bag is, like that's cool. The church will support you. A little, you know, far from true, but whatever.
The next episode continues Henry's whirlwind romance. Other than that, she's a wonderful person. Henry starts dating a pretty interior decorator whom Kip detests.
Yeah, a lot of Kip and Henry opposite side of the fence when it comes to women this season, like because Henry's also going to, there's a thing with Kip's sister. So I feel like this was a little bit of these two episodes were a little bit of a retread of the idea that Henry doesn't get along with Kip's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And also what's really weird about this episode, which we see in this and then never again, is we hear inside characters' heads.
Oh, I
like,
love that.
Sonny sees the woman that Henry's dating and like they're being catty back and forth, like, oh, this she's not nothing, and like she's so pretty, but she's kind of like a ditz or whatever. You know, like it's just weird. And then like we have like an Isabel thought that's about something else. Like there's a tag there that works.
Oh, and then the waitress comes over and is like, am I the only one that noticed that these two look like those women that live upstairs?
Yeah. Nah.
I thought that was a funny sort of moment because that's the only time they ever did it. I forget why that started, why the first person was, we were reading the first person's thoughts, but that it kept going, I thought was funny because it had no reason to keep going like that.
Just another silly thing they tried here.
One thing I feel is weird as on a grand scale, and again, this is something maybe you shouldn't think about because it's a sitcom, but like, if you're Henry and you're dating a woman, how do you explain to her that you live in this hotel for women? Like, it's difficult enough, like, because when Sonny had to find out, he was like, hey, just so you know, I may. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like, how do you, if you're Henry...
Didn't he end up telling her? He ends up telling one of the girls.
No, in the room, yeah.
Yeah, this is the girl that's from L.A. and everything, right?
And he's like,
yeah.
Oh, great. And they're doing the California accent.
Yeah, and they're talking about sushi and everything.
Yeah, no, he tells her because she comes in.
Does this girl look like she eats sushi in the Valley?
Yeah, I was surprised about that too, because there's a scene where it's just like, oh, she knows and she's cool with it. Like, everybody's just going to be cool with this.
I'll say, I think some people find it creepy, but rent, even back then and now, so expensive in the city.
What we learn in this episode maybe is that Henry's a virgin, or he at least seems very reluctant to bed this woman who's like very ready to have sex with him.
Yeah, but didn't we learn before that?
No, well, we learn in the episode with Kip's sister, she wants Henry
yes.
to pop her cherry, yeah. And then we also, it also sounds like in that episode, Henry's like, I too, it also, I also thought in that episode,
but
it sounded like Henry was
a
virgin.
You just were saying that, like, he was implying that the girl was
loose.
Elect. Yeah.
Right. No, I know, it's wildly inconsistent.
But I don't think he hit, but what I love about this episode, this whole episode was worth it for that one final joke where they pull down the Murphy bed and Amy is laying on the Murphy bed.
Oh my God.
I was like,
great.
This is amazing.
Because I did not expect that.
And also, this is another episode where it gets really significantly somber in a hurry, because Henry's like, Kip, what is the deal? Why are you being such a dick? And he's like, I'm afraid I'm losing you. And it's the same kind
of
thing that like
end
the whole
of episode.
First season, right? Yeah, it's just like,
yeah.
It's like, what?
It was such
yeah.
a downer. And he's like, oh, that's why. And then you just hear like canned
yeah.
applause. It's like, what is happening?
I mean, I'm glad they're touching these kind of issues. It's just timing.
It's just not a good note to end on.
Yeah.
You usually want to end on a joke or a laugh, not like a like an introspective thought
about
my future.
A quarter of the episodes feel like they're a very special episode by the end, because it ends on like the opposite of a joke. Like, not even just like
yeah.
a serious thing, but like the other
like,
end of the
like literally it'd be like going like, Henry, what are we doing with our life? And then like applause.
Miller Boyette.
Yeah. But I guess it should. They should at least give 30 seconds more. That would kind of save it. Be like, I'm always going to be here for you, man.
Yeah,
blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah.
There
you
should,
know?
It feels like a
setup. Yeah.
It felt like a setup to a tender punchline, right? Like Kip, man, like we got to grow up one day. And instead of Kip going like, I don't want to grow up, it should be like, yeah, I mean, we're not Peter Pan, are we? Right? Like,
yeah.
And then you end the episode.
The next episode, The Slightly Illustrated Man, we referenced this earlier, Kip and Amy decide to prove their commitment to Sonny and Henry. Again, different level of commitment here, because Kip and Sonny, together on some
yeah.
level, Henry and Amy, very much not together, they decide to prove their commitment by getting tattoos. And this is the episode that begins with Kip making out with the sandwich girl. Why?
Yeah, well, okay, we'll get to that in a second. My pet peeve, movies, television, film, tattoos, and the way that people, they're portrayed in film, and never good.
Oh, this is what your tweet was about?
And you should never drink, they will not, because
yes.
the blood
very
is thin,
true,
and
true.
A lot of people will not give you a tattoo if you're drunk.
Shout out Racing with the Moon, where they show up, where Cage and Sean Penn show up blackout drunk and, like, want to get tattoos there, so.
Yeah, those were I had some tattoo issues with that.
My quickly two-year tattoo point, though, tattooing is actually illegal in New York City at this point. From 61 to 92 or 3, tattooing was illegal in the city.
All right. The bigger issue, yes, is that this episode starts with Hank's cheating on Sonny.
Sonny shows up while they're making out, and she says, we're free agents, babe. We don't own each other.
Yeah, I was
and,
like, whoa.
And Hank's is kind of like, all right, cool. Like, I can date around. She's like, yeah, but I can date around too. And he's like, and again, this is sort of, I think, Mike, you might have been saying that Kip seems like the kind of guy who, like, when you go to the movies with him and the ticket taker rips her ticket stub, he'd be like, wait, why are you looking at my girl like that? Like, this sort of triggers his, like, oh, I don't want, like, because again, stereotypically, but in the world of the show, Kip is dating up. That, like, if other dudes get to date Sonny, which happens in this episode where he, like, fights the guy, he's going to lose her. Because he's, for the sake of the show, not good at what he does. Like, a lot of things, he's not, like, good at what he does. Like, he's a genuine and, like, he's a kind guy.
Right.
But he's kind of an idiot.
He's a fool.
He's possessive. He's manic.
They make it very clear that, like, you know, every room he goes into with her, he brags about it because it's a big get for him.
The biggest problem, though, is that it breaks the premise of the show. Like, he is only dressing as a woman to be with near Sonny. And if he's going to cheat on Sonny, what's the point of
yep.
staying at the Susan B, even if you can...
No, I agree.
Like, I understand, maybe they still can't afford it, this, whatever, but, like, it just feels like, why did they even go there with this? It breaks the show for me. This episode doesn't really work at all because of that for me.
Well, it's confusing, because, like, what are they then? You know, maybe it's not cheating. Maybe they're just, maybe...
Well, are they
right?
poly? Like, do they have an open... It wasn't a really
like,
a
I get,
big
maybe,
thing
like,
back
is it
then.
Possible that they just never discussed this? Like,
no, because it seems
like... they
like,
never had the defining the relationship chat?
It feels like they defined their relationship to me in the first episode.
It did.
Where they're like, we're doing this with each other. Like, we're with each other. Okay. If, like, you know, we're in this, so...
It's
so
also
many
not
questions.
Something where he's, like, struggling the entire episode. Like, should I date the sandwich girl? He makes a decision pretty quick. Like,
no, it seems like they've
gone out. And
then
everyone else is like, I'm not going to tell.
dumb.
Very strange.
At least in this episode, you know, when he fights, when he wants to fight her date, we get a really good pratfall in a chair. Like, Tom Hanks, like, falls into a chair, and then the chair falls backwards. I like that.
I also liked how, and this is just maybe why Ruth Dunbar is my favorite character. She just pops up everywhere. Like, they're at the tattoo parlor, and she was just there getting a cover-up.
Well, because she's got the tattoo of her ex-boyfriend who has, like, 9 names.
Yeah. But she's there, but she always drops, like, these little bits of, like, motherly advice and stuff, and I don't know. I liked...
It becomes a recurring thing.
I just liked how they bump into Ruth more than Ruth works with them. You know what I mean? Like, I really felt like they could have kept her around without having her be part of the business.
Well, they have the Ann Perkins problem, but they're making it funny, at least.
Yeah. As opposed to Ann Perkins, who's just kind of a boring, bland character. Rashida Jones is great and beautiful and talented and wonderful, but Ann Perkins is not a great character.
Debatable, but yeah, no, people tend to agree with that. That's why she's the Ann Perkins character.
You know, in real life, the actress who plays Ruth, her partner is Sarah Paulson.
Yeah, Sarah Paulson.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So at the and you know what's even crazier? In the first season, in their office, because I looked her up after, and I was like, now it'd be more obvious, but back then I'm not so sure. There, in the deep background, there's a lot of like rainbow symbols and symbolism and stuff, and you know that's sort of like gay pride colors now and everything. So I wonder if they were sneaking some of that stuff in back then.
Well, because I mean, to steal sort of a thread from HTML, another show on the network, like this show in total is so aggressively heterosexual. Every episode is Kip and Henry exerting how they want to be manly or are manly.
Yeah, it could be so much worse, though. I would say most shows at the time, especially dealing with this subject matter, were a lot worse.
Not saying that it's good or bad. I'm just saying that, like, these characters are defined by the women in their lives. And you don't need, like, to have any kind of other representation, even if it's like subtly in the background, is a welcome adjustment. Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah. You know, and it was also struck me that there's no other lead men on the show too. Like that kind of skip.
I think that's like the show is strangely progressive in that way that the men are usually the bumbling idiots and the women are like strong people. One of them's running the hotel.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know? One of them buys the business out for them.
Right. Silent backer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you have a lot of strong.
And
women
we find out
here
in the first season that the ad agency that they work at would not run without Amy. Remember, like that one episode where she shows up late,
she's like the glue,
the Joey Midnight one or whatever. Like everybody's losing their minds when she's not there. So.
There's more women than men on screen in a male-centered show, and that rarely happens. There are a lot of shows that are, like, just women, but it's usually, that's a girl show, you know? This is a guy show. And this is, like, a more balanced thing. So, not saying by today's standards it's progressive at all, but I think for the time, it's more than I thought it would be when I first started really watching.
It's fair.
Yeah.
Next episode is the 2% solution. Amy's small amount of stock in Kip and Henry's company gives her the deciding vote in a shareholder decision. And this is where Ruth and Kip and Henry are like whining and dining her to sort of get her to it. Because they both had different ideas for this sales pitch, which eventually it turns out that they need both views to get it to work. But this is where it's not much of an episode, but you know, they're bringing Amy out, they're buying her jewelry, they're bringing her to fancy dinners, they're giving, you know, buying her massages or whatever. My big takeaway from this episode is that Ruth has a coffee mug that says Ruthless on it.
Oh, I love that.
That's awesome.
They almost achieve a minute of continuity here where Ruth is gonna stop working at the ad agency and work with them full time, but then at the end she gets hired back by the ad agency. So I was like, oh, they almost stuck with it, almost made a change, but they decided to like, no, we better not. Let's pull that back a little bit.
The next episode is the last one on the DVD, Cablevision. Kip and Henry produce an episode-length cable variety show, including an appearance by their special guest star and kidnap victim, Penny Marshall.
What struck me about that is how Miller Boyette pitched this as a male counterpart to Laverne and Shirley.
Yep.
And she ended up being on one of the episodes. It's really cool.
And she plays Penny Marshall. Kip's asking her about being Laverne. And it's a very, it's not like, it's not super meta, but it's more meta than a lot of the other episodes.
I don't know. I don't know if it exactly works the entire time.
Well, what I liked about it was it's a telethon episode. You always get, you get those in sitcoms a lot. 100%. It's an early mention of cable programming. So, you know,
nice
like cable
window,
television kind of thing. And I just like the idea that they were really eager for this account, that they were going to go that far out of their way for, like, what was it, like a rat trap or something like
that? The rat control guy.
Rat control guy. A little more far-fetched. They're like, we're going to go above and beyond for you, but I thought it was great. A lot of talent on display here by the cast.
I think if, again, this is something that happens later in a show's, well, it is late in the show's run, but later in like a successful show's run, it makes a lot more sense. Like think of this as one episode, right, a week, right? And if you're just popping into this show, you're like, what the hell is this?
Yep.
You know, like, yeah. What in God's name is this? For our present, how many more episodes on the air date schedule are there?
Seven more.
And for us, it's the last episode, and they have that like conversation on like what it is essentially to exist or not exist on TV at the end.
It feels like a final episode.
Yeah, it does feel like a final episode. I'm actually surprised. I guess when they reorganized it, they're like, well, it was the final episode. We might as well put it there.
Well, because I also think the final episode that aired, which we'll get to, is not the last picture show. This is where they start acting like old people, and Ruth's like, I can't wait till you're actually old. And I feel like that kind of works as a final episode,
that
too.
That does, too.
Where it's like, let's see these characters that we're not going to get to see their future.
Fair.
What their future could be like. And I think they both work as a final episode, yeah. Because it's either a more meta ending, a more sort of weird, we're making TV, but now we're not actually able to make TV anymore, or, you know, these characters that you love, and you can sort of, because any show that gets canceled, you sort of wonder, like, what's going to happen or whatever. This, you sort of get to see different possibilities, and some are bad, some are better, but Ruth always looks great in exactly the same outfit.
She shows up, we'll
get to that.
But I think that is something that worked better in the past than it does today with sitcom and continuity and stuff, where some shows do try and run continuity through it, but back in this time especially, it's the rerun generation or the rerun thing. Yeah. Like, most of these could have been the last episode of season two, and you could probably have sat there and been like, you know what, if I think about it hard enough, this makes sense to be the last episode, because I just feel like they're designed to just pick one out and at any order and just watch it on its own.
You're right.
So that's the thing, and it's a real difference between, especially today, which not in 1982, but a difference today between broadcast and like network versus like Netflix or Amazon. Like, on TV, when you air an episode, you need to have enough in the episode so that if this is the first episode they're watching, they can sort of have a sense of who these people are. So whether it's the intro where it's like, you know, we used to live in this dumpy motel and we found out why because it got knocked down, blah, 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 blah. Or just like the fact that like everything sort of gets reset or whatever, that there's character growth to a certain extent. But at the same time, in theory, you could watch any episode of Bosom Buddies and know enough about what's going on to be like, okay, cool. But no one, on the other hand, is going to like open up like The Crown, we were talking about earlier, and like start watching like season two first. Like, there's no reason for that. So like, you set up the story in the first episode of season one or season two or whatever, and then it's just, you're there. Like, you're not jumping around. People aren't entering in the middle. And I think that's it's a different way of writing programs that like you have to sort of, these have to be standalone because of the nature of how they're delivered to you.
Yeah, that works. A lot of it, not just the writing, but the chemistry. And I think like this show keeps that chemistry going and it's strong and stuff. And like, I could see this cast do a completely different show.
Oh yeah.
Or even half of these people, if there was a spinoff of something somehow.
Amy's World.
Every single one of them, to varying degrees, obviously, considering Hanks is part of this, continued on to be, at the very least, working actors until, you know, now or their death.
In this episode, Cablevision, we mentioned it earlier, this is one of at least three times that Peter Scolari juggles, and he's an incredible juggler.
Dude, they do the double juggle with the bowling pins.
Yeah.
I was losing my mind.
Trying to look for strings. Like, I was like...
Well, because I've always had a difficult time learning how to juggle.
I learned how to juggle somewhat when I worked at the ice cream store in high school, and we had, like, no...
What the hell, Joey?
Well, you didn't ask me about jobs I had in high school.
I asked you high school
stories. You gotta listen to Cinemakers for that.
I learned how to juggle because we had no customers. I was like, my friend learned how to juggle, and I was just like, I might as well do this too. The amount of effort they're putting in, it is kind of a shit show, this episode that they're putting together, because like, they don't, like, Hanks doesn't know what he's doing, like, he's sort of bumbling and everything, but I don't know how any client could look at the effort they're putting in and not be like, these are my guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it feels the kind, like, their whole boutique agency sort of thing is like, we don't have the money, but like, we're here for you, and like, the fact that they're putting together a telethon for a rat control account, like, that's the level of dedication. This guy is, you know, in the control booth, and he's just like, I'm not sure what's going on, I don't know about this. And then at the end, like, there's sort of like a reverse, he's like, you know, if they get Laverne, like, if they get Penny Marshall, like, I'm just like, they're doing so much here for you.
And I actually thought most of it was going pretty well. I mean, you know, all things considered, they had a lot of different segments going
on
there.
Yeah, but
there,
the transitions, the segments.
No, but that's part of the gag.
It's part of the gag for us, but for the guy, I'd be like,
well, no,
right.
But I love, like, when Kip's like, you know, we'll be right back after these commercials, and they're like, we don't have commercials. He's like, all right, we're back.
Yeah.
We have, like, you know, we have Ruth's cooking corner, the Amy Cassidy corner. You know, he interviews Penny Marshall with, like, the worst questions, like, how much money do you make? You know, I hear you and Laverne fight or whatever.
Wait,
or you and Shirley fight.
She's doing it as a favor for Ruth, but yet it seemed like someone kidnapped her.
Yeah,
what was
that
happening
was not
with that? Did we ever get to the bottom
of
that?
Nope.
Was the one who tied her up, but
So
why?
Maybe to keep her there? Who knows?
Yeah.
It got lost in the teleplay somewhere.
Yeah, earlier scripts cleared it up.
The next episode, The Grandfather. Henry saves the life of a little girl who turns out to be the granddaughter of a mob boss. This is where we see Kip as a penguin.
Yes. Yeah, that was great.
And this is where they find out that Elliot Pardo, he saves their campaign because they basically get fired. And then this guy gets shaken down by the mob boss and it's like, oh, we'll be back.
Yeah.
And this is where it's just basically an episode where Henry can't be calm around this guy because he knows he's an organized crime.
Well, they're asked to hold on to a package for him, right? And I was like, oh, it's the granddaughter's birthday gift, obviously. And they go like bananas when the package is missing, and they think that they're summoned to the mobster's mansion to be whacked.
But they're for the party.
But they're there for the surprise.
But what I loved is this reminded me of The Sopranos, where Tony knows that like his neighbor's terrified of him. Tony gives him like an empty box, can you keep an eye on this for me? And the guy's like, I guess I could do that. And like, there's like the one or two scenes of like the guy and his wife just like, I don't know. But like it's that sort of thing. But you know, I like that. That's sort of smart.
Yeah, and again, just to say, that cutaway of the mansion, like, there's, like, two...
The dog,
like,
the Dobermans, on the yard?
Two, I think, like, German Shepherds.
Oh, okay. Like, it looked like it was from, like, a Charles Bronson movie or something.
I'll say this, that mafia guy is, like, people, very diverse.
What I liked is that they have the code that they tell Isabel, like, that we're in with the mob, and, like, they do, like, the thing on their nose where they're just like this, and then, like, the two guys, like, burst upstairs, and then she's like, who are these guys? And like, Kip just, like, you know, with the nose thing, that she's like, oh, I gotta get out of here. My name is, you know, Table Chairman or whatever. Like, just, like, some, like, totally fake name, because she's like, I don't want to be involved with this. So the next episode, I told you guys, I think. So the first season, The Rewrite, my favorite episode by a mile. This next episode, my favorite episode by a mile, Hildy's Dirt Nap.
Oh, my God.
A middle-aged man falls in love with Hildy, so Henry fakes Hildy's death. I loved this episode.
Really?
I loved...
That's interesting.
...this episode.
I thought it was... I mean, it's a good episode. It's funny. I like how they kill off Hildy and they have the funeral at the Susan B. I thought that was bizarre. I loved how this man, he was going to marry another woman back home, but he fell in love with Hildy, and then we find out he goes back home to marry that woman, and it's played by Peter Scolari.
Yeah.
It was
amazing. That was great.
That was great, yes. But what about it for you really elevated?
So a couple different things. I love when they're sort of out of their element, and it's a different side that we see them as, so like they're all like grieving. I love that it's once again sort of like the season one episode where they're trying to get revenge on the guy who's mean to Amy, that they're all in on it together, that from the very beginning when they're at the table or whatever, and it's, I think, Sonny and Hildy, and the guy, I'm like, is this guy in love with Hildy? And then, like, yes, and then just, like, his overzealousness. I think what I liked about it is that, like, there's a very simple solution. Tell this guy, hey, we're dudes. But the fact that they go to, like, a length to fake funeral to sort of not hurt this guy's feelings, but at the same time, like, this woman that you're in love with is dead, and, like, just the pratfall, like, Amy doing a puppet show at the funeral, Isabel auditioning for her, like, would-be agent, like, by singing at the funeral.
That made sense to me, and that was funny. What was the puppet show? Like,
I don't know, but I just love that it's like, because it feels like they're doing this thing, and like, they even make a joke about, like, you know, she was so well-loved, but this could only be attended by, like, her five friends or whatever. And, like, you know, this is why her parents aren't here. This is why Kip's not here or whatever. That, like, you know, there's Wayne Gretzky signing autographs. Like, it's just,
I like that, yeah, because they brought the Canadian thing back finally, because they were, like, selling that a lot.
But they're from Ohio, really. I mean, I guess they moved to Ohio.
Hildy, yes. And they're from Canada, and they didn't mention it in the season till this episode.
I think what I loved about this most was that there's a very, very simple solution. You just tell the guy, hey, we're dudes. I know you think you're in love with me, but, like, I'm a dude. And the lengths they go to avoid that is just preposterous. And I could not stop. Like, I love this episode.
What blew my mind is at the end of the episode, Henry tells him, yep. I was Hildy at the end.
And
like,
he says, I thought in my country we had a housing shortage.
And, like, the guy's not even upset that they lied to him about killing off.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I like this episode, but it was wacky. It was a little too wacky for me.
I thought it was good, though. The other note I had was they mentioned Alan Alda again. They mentioned him a couple times.
But you know the thing they mentioned, the joke they mentioned more than that is, like, Osmond family, or, like, the...
Yes.
Osmond, like, Don.
Yeah, because they get him on two fronts, from, like, the singing and the religion thing.
Yeah, I think it's, like, four or five times in the season, which is okay.
And the other note that I have is that Hildy died by taking a comet to the neck.
Yeah, oh my God.
A comet.
I just love this episode. Next episode, Kip off the old block. Kip tries to prevent his parents from breaking up. And my first note is, holy shit, Kip's mom looks exactly like Ruth. Again, sort of maybe hair blindness, but the same hairstyle, the same hair color.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's not like you're dating your mom, but like you're working for your mom. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, no wonder she was able to sort of exert influence over them.
This episode got dark. at dinner.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I don't like this. This is very uncomfortable.
This is a very, like, this is almost the opposite episode because it was uncomfortable during and then they kind of made
up. Well, this is like Kip's parents are going to get a divorce. It's like what this is like about and everything. And then he shows his dad that he dresses as a woman, right? He comes out to both of his parents about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just like a, hey,
well, he tells his dad and then his mom's like, because then he tries to mediate, right? And mom's walking away and he's like, how do I get her to stay? I dress in women's clothing. And then she's like, wait, you knew about this? He's like, it's been a long day or whatever. Yeah. Like,
that's the one that ends on Kip saying he's afraid of growing up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it's brought back down. Wow.
I mean, it's just all around, I think, my least favorite episode of the season. We meet Kip's uncle.
Right, yeah. Is this the relative or one of the relatives? I think there was like a really homophobic line, like something about like, he didn't want to kiss him because like, it was implying that he had a gay cousin because the uncle kissed him too much.
Huh.
There was, and I was like, whoa.
Too bad they didn't cut that out when they did the DVDs, DVD versions.
I'm like, geez. Like,
next episode, the way Kip and Henry were, the guys recall how they gave up their youthful ambition and went to go work for Ruth. And this is what we were talking about before, that she shows up at their college dorm and we see them both like hairy and like with, like Henry's got this crazy mustache.
Ohio State.
And she offers $20,000, but only for Kip, not Henry. This reminded me sort of the episode of Always Sunny, the Pepe Sylvia episode, where Mac and Charlie get a job and they're like, no, like we just need health insurance.
Yeah, yeah, they,
like
they
you can just give us health insurance. Like we'll work for the same salary.
I like when Hanks comes in and he's all clean cut again.
Yeah, I like this episode.
Yeah, I thought this was good too. I loved seeing them in college, in high school, like that kind of thing, playing younger.
I appreciate the continuity of like where they're from and stuff. Did anyone catch their actual hometown? Because it's not Cleveland.
No.
I'll give you a clue. I don't know if it was one of all his movies.
Oh.
It's a Shia movie that has this in the title. It might be a high school film too.
Really?
It was the subject of Project Greenlight.
Oh, Shaker Heights?
Yeah, they mentioned that their actual hometown is Shaker Heights.
No kidding.
I forgot all about that movie. This episode also has a very, very somber ending where they're like, hey, you know, we've been working for Ruth. We don't get to do our personal work anymore. There's like a longing shot of like to the art, like the easel and the typewriter.
Yeah, that was depressing.
He's like, Henry, when's the last time you did any serious writing? And he's like, I haven't done any serious painting in 6 months. And they just kind of like look at each
end
other.
End of
like,
episode.
It's depressing because like I think everyone who's into art or considers themselves an artist, not everyone because some people can make money off their paintings and stuff, but and anyone who tries to be an artist has to compromise at some point and get a quote-unquote real job.
Yeah.
And this happens to everyone, and the fact that it freaking ends on that note, you're like,
but it also seems like their job is pretty fulfilling for their talents and needs, right? Like they're using writing and art and all that to make their commercials and
yeah,
stuff. So you would think that they would feel
a little
more fulfilled.
Bit, but he wants to write his novel, which is less important in this season. And Kip wants to be like an artist.
The weirdest thing is that this leads directly into the, if it's in the same order, in the Who's on Thirst, because they go to the ski lodge to work on their writing and painting. That was
like
weird.
One of the, like, boom.
Yeah.
Which they don't do.
And this is like Who's on Thirst, Kip and Henry spend a weekend in a mountain cabin without anything to eat or drink.
This is another great sitcom
premise.
And this
is where the tiger shows up too. This is
okay, this is the tiger back. Because it was almost a bottle episode. I was like, we're going to just be Kip and Henry starving to death this whole episode.
Well, it feels kind of like they're like, we need to have something with the girls, but like, you don't. Like, you don't need to show the women. Like, you can just have them.
I actually didn't hate the tiger stuff, but did you read that the tiger actually got loose in the studio?
No.
Yeah, that was it was actually a thing.
That's awesome. Oh my God. I just think, I mean, it was very out of character, but what are you going to do? I just like the idea that it was Ruth that let the tiger free, because you would just, it seems like more of an Amy thing that would happen, I guess, that it was Ruth.
When I saw that tiger come in, I'm like, oh my God, this is so stupid. And look, it does make sense in that world. I think the tiger should have a handler, but they do film commercials, not like they were in their old job and the tiger walked in.
This was one of the episodes that kind of got me back on the side of sitcoms where I was like, oh, you know, they're supposed to be stupid and dumb and like, you know, you just get what you can out of it. And if it's working for you, good, all the better.
My only other note about this episode is that they're both whittling wood while they're in the cabin because they've got nothing else to do. And Kip makes like the snake, like the wood snake, and Henry makes a Maserati. Like it's like this like beautifully intricate little woodworking. So here's the episode I messaged you guys last night. And I said I was getting a headache from watching the show. Not with my sister, you pig. After Henry dates Kip's sister, the guys get into a fight that lands them in the hospital. This is where they show up and looking like New Wave for Sai's House of New Wave Supplies, which I loved.
Yeah, that was cool.
Kip's sister shows up, and the premise is that Kip does not want her to move to New York, so he wants to show her a miserable time, which is why he's going to allow Henry to take her out, because Henry's, I guess, the worst. And like, but then he, because Kip is a maniac, thinks that Henry and his sister had sex or made out, and he yells at him the entire episode, "Did you touch my sister? Did you touch my sister? Did you touch my sister?" to the point where they then fall off the fire escape and nearly die. This was so dumb. Like we need to have an episode where, like, he's dating her sister, or, like, he's dating, you know, Kip's sister, but, like, there's nothing to it. The punchline, or the whatever, the twist of it is that, like, she and Henry are both virgins, and he's like, no, you gotta find, we gotta wait for the right guy, which is, like, it's a weird kind of message.
Yeah, that's the thing that struck me, is that they strayed from the real meat of the episode. Like, the whole thing about Kip's sister wanting to lose her virginity to Henry is 3 minutes, and the rest of the episode is Kip angry at Henry for taking out his sister, in which Kip asked him to do in the first place, and now he's upset that they might be close or whatever. Like, he never even, correct me if I'm wrong, he never says to Kip, your sister wanted me to deflower her or anything like that. That didn't need to be in the episode.
They even talk about when, like, he's like, oh, I think when she tells her side of things, she's like, no, he was protecting me. Like, he didn't tell you what I asked him to do.
They're looking for something for conflict, and that's always, again, it's always touchy. You know, even in real life, some people don't like you dating their sister or brother or things like that. So I think they're just trying to find a situation where they can inflate it to the degree where friends fight, you know? And so, yeah. Like, stay away from my sister, and, like, I wasn't touching your sister, all this stuff, like, overprotective Kip. That kind of goes along with his personality. He's very overprotective of Sunny from time to time, so. But I'm with you. It didn't come across the best way. It came across very loud.
And this also actually reminds me, I didn't realize how much of a retread it was. Remember in the first season, Ruth has her niece or whatever come into town, and she's like, I want her to have a miserable time. Henry, can you take her out? Like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, it's funny, but it's also like, you already did this.
I don't mind that, because that's a recurring thing in sitcoms. Like, they want that to be an in-joke, that if they go 5-6 seasons, we already predict it, like, someone's new in town, and he raises his hands in the air, like, guess I'm taking her out.
This was the episode I noticed that their production studio is sandwiched between an Oriental massage parlor and Hazel's Bar, which people seem to be flooding Hazel's Bar during the morning. I don't know if you check out that shot of it, but there's like 2 or 3 people going in and out of there.
I know that was happening. I didn't put 2 and 2 together. That's funny.
The one part of this episode that I did like is that it reminded me of the rewrite, in that, like, Hanks is like, I know exactly what happened. Here's my idea. And, like, he has, like, his idea of Lounge Lizard Henry, where he's like this, like, real slick talker, like, in this, like,
oh, yeah,
gaudy suit show up. And,
like, literally crawling like a lizard on the ground.
Like, I like the absurd element of it all, but then when we find out that it's just like she's lonely and in love with Henry, it's just like, oh.
My favorite episode is a lot like what I thought was like the rewrite. We haven't gotten into it yet, but when we get to the Last Picture Show.
Well, that's the next episode. It's the last episode. Not the Last Picture Show. Kip and Henry imagine what life will be like when they're senior citizens.
Yeah.
And this is where they come back to the concert at like 2:30 in the morning. They're like, oh, it's so loud, kids these days.
I completely relate, because they come back from a concert and they're like, who are these? Look at what these weird kids are doing nowadays. These weird shows, like, I just wanted to sit there and listen to the music, and I gotta deal with, like, kids pogo dancing and stuff, and, like, that sounds like me now. Like, I get
you
that.
You are an old man.
I am.
You are a completely converted sitcom fan. You can relate so well.
I like the in one of the flash forwards or whatever, Henry just, like, listing off North Jersey towns. He's like, blah, 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 basically stops on, like, the NJ Transit line, like the Bergen County line.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Someone looked at a map.
We have old Kip and one of them shamelessly hitting on everyone who's around him. Sunny's the one who, like, goes through, like, the most wild variations. Like, in the first one, she kind of looks like she stumbled out of Scooby-Doo. Like, she's got the crazy glasses and the big red hair, and she's like that, like, not leopard print, but, like whatever the purple equivalent of, like, a leopard print outfit is on. And then, like, in one where she's, like, she comes in, I thought it was, at first, like, Amy, because she's got, like, these huge boobs, like, these really huge hips, and then, you know, there's a couple, just, like, that's, I guess, the joke, that she's always going to look bold and weird, but then, like, this, I don't know if it's the funniest one or not, Mike, but the last one, where, you know, she and Hanks are, like, just boning all the time, it reminds me of our least favorite Watch the Throne celebrity, because Hanks puts his hand on her knee, and she's like,
oh, right, it, like, makes her orgasm.
And they talk about Charlize, because in that movie, she talks about how anywhere in her body, it's in a erogenous zone, and, like, touch her knee, and, like, she, you know, whatever. So, yeah, like, I was just like, the knee in both of these. Oh, yeah, you were there.
I liked seeing Hanks in the captain's outfit, because he'll be a captain again for a while.
I'm
Captain Phillips.
I'm the captain now.
And he also plays Captain Sully Sullenberg, too. So.
Yo, oh, yeah.
Birds.
Sully.
A lot of souls in that plane. God, there's so much Hanks that we got to get to. Ooh,
he talks to a captain in Castaway.
Oh, and I thought Scolari, his first old age makeup, he looked like Steve Martin.
Kip, worst of all, you're a dirty, lecherous, degenerate, no style, no standards. You've grown old with no grace. You're just sad and worthless, which is just Ruth's, like,
cripes.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, and then we, you know, the Ruth element.
We get one flash forward where Kip and Henry are still dressing like Buffy and Ildy.
Yeah.
As old women. Like, I like that they progressed their own age of the costumes. There's the one, oh, when they're old men playing checkers, they do the crotchety old who is it. They can't even keep up the charade anymore. Amy's an old homeless woman with, like, wheels in, like, a shopping cart.
Yeah.
Oh, that was, she was great as that crazy homeless person, I thought. And she was also great during the telethon when she was doing, like, her Chiquita Banana routine and, like, kicking her legs up on Henry's shoulder and everything. I was like, whoa, like, she's really moving around the stage.
She's really talented. They all are. They're all so good. We, I don't think we mentioned it, but we get a lot more singing in this season from Isabel, mm-hmm. too.
Because she doesn't really have anything to do. Even though she has more responsibilities within the world of the show doesn't have anything for her to do.
Yeah.
And so, like, we might as well have her sing as opposed to just the Bob Saget episode. They have the Cablevision, and they have a couple different ones.
Did we mention last week that, because I was, like, doing, like I said, doing a lot more research. I know Saget was on that episode, but did we mention that he was actually the warm-up comedian for the show?
No, really?
Yeah.
For Bosom Buddies?
For Bosom Buddies. Like, that's, like, they just got him, not off the street. But
no,
like,
but they were like, hey, you're the warm-up. We need a comic for this episode.
And they usually have comics, at least back then, to warm up the audience. So they're like in the mood for laughing for the live studio audience. And he was actually the warm-up comic. And then eventually they were like, wouldn't it be great if we put him in an episode? And then that's when they threw him in that episode.
Wouldn't it be great if we made a whole TV show around
him? Yeah, essentially. Like,
but that was it. That's all 18 episodes. Season 1 was 19. Season 2 is 18.
What's the total? Do the math.
37. Easy math. So, okay. So let's talk about favorite and least favorite moments. I already said my favorite is the whole Hildy's Dirt Nap episode. I just loved that. But did you guys have a favorite episode or favorite scene or moment?
So I think my favorite episode was not the last picture show, but I think my favorite moment was the telethon.
Telethon was really good.
Like, I just loved how it got out of control. And I miss, to be honest, guys, like, I miss a good telethon. We don't have telethons
anymore. So a podcast I talked about on a handful of our podcasts, one of my favorites, I thought my favorite podcast, is Never Not Funny. And once a year, they do Podcastathon, where they do a 12-hour, actually becomes 13 or 14 hours usually. They do a 12-hour where they have guests every 20 minutes and they raise money for Smile Train. So, like, it still exists, but I think you have to be in that mindset. Because, like, people growing up today, I saw maybe a couple, but not really. Like, even, you know, I'm not that much younger than you. I'm significantly younger than you because you're an old man and I'm not. But even, like, a difference, like, 7 or 8 years, I didn't grow up with them. And so, like, right. I feel like if you didn't grow up with them, it would never be in my mind to be like, let's put on a telethon. But for you, who grew up watching them, you would have to be the one to revive it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it'd be like explaining what pirate radio is to people on Brian's program, right? It's like, nowadays, it's just such a foreign concept because we have podcasts. But, like, yes, there is this previous stage of what is happening now.
Or, like, similarly, like, when Maya Rudolph brings back her Variety Hour, like, you might have been a part of it, but, like, it's the same sort of, like, it's the older generation, not older generation, but, like, the sort of the middle-aged that reflects the older generation, and it's, like, without those kind of formats would be lost to the sands of time, or just, like, you know, reruns of syndication. Brian, what about you? What was your favorite moment or favorite episode?
I think the favorite moments of mine were seeing them as high schoolers and seeing them as college students.
You're always on brand.
Fair. Very fair. I didn't care for, like, the reunion part of that episode. Again, even though it was silly, I liked seeing them as high schoolers. Because I liked seeing, especially since we got both of them this season. Because I was wondering, like, how did Kip sell out? How did he get from this hippie, essentially, to, like, moving to New York?
Well, and he was offered $20,000 by Ruth Dunbar, so that'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, and again, we see the shave happen, so I guess that's my favorite moment.
Cool. What about least favorite? I mean, I guess on a high level or, you know, whatever, every time the episode ended out of nowhere with a somber note, I'm like, aren't we supposed to be laughing? Like,
but it's fun to talk about, though.
Oh, definitely fun to talk about, but I also feel like you could do entire episodes that are special episodes. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like the closest they get to an entire episode where it's more serious is when Henry dates Kip's sister, but even that is not serious all the way through. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you have the ability in a format like this to make an episode that's all about drug use or like
a divorce,
you know, prostitution or divorce,
right,
or whatever.
If you wanted to. I still don't understand why they're trying to tackle these kind of topics. I guess my least favorite thing is I just really get a sense that they knew it was going to be canceled, you know? So I think they rushed a lot of development, which isn't so bad now. It's rare you get a cast to me this good and you're honestly not able to do much with it because you only have 2 seasons. I guess the ending of it, the fact that it ended, is my low point. I would have liked to have seen more seasons and some development. But at the end of the day, for your show,
yeah,
it was a good thing that it ended. Sure. It gave Tom Hanks a lot of time to develop into the star he was.
I referenced it last episode, Mike, but we've talked about before about, like, the Best of Times could have been, like, a real weird, fun, goofy show, but if that got picked up and Nicolas Cage starred in that, like, we would have missed, even if they just lost, like, 2 or 3 years, like, we would have lost...
Still, we would have lost Valley Girl or something,
yeah, exactly.
you know?
So, like, things happen for a reason. So.
Yeah, you just don't know the opposite, too. Like, maybe Jennifer Aniston is a huge... Not that she's not a big movie star, but she's a huge movie star.
Well, yeah.
If Friends gets canceled the first season.
Well, what if she never did Leprechaun 1, right? Then she never does Friends, and then, you know, so... Every job is important.
Tom Hanks doesn't meet Rita Wilson if he's not in this, and then the world is different somehow.
She's definitely not in That Thing You Do then, so.
Oh, there you go. And it ruins the entire film.
What about you, Mike? What was your least favorite part of Bosom Buddies season 2?
Well, I agree with Brian. I was a little... By the end of this, I could have gone for a third season. I was surprised.
What a transformation.
I was like, man, oh man, what is going on here? But... I think, like you said, Joey, like they had chances to do one or two serious episodes if they wanted to, as opposed to sort of, you know, injecting that tone into an otherwise...
Like 4 or 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd say the one that bothered me the most is Kip's parents fighting at dinner. Like that just really sort of... There was no coming back from that episode for me, and so I kind of feel like that one's a little broken.
And also one other thing that we didn't really talk about in that episode, when we talked about that episode, is that, like, it makes sense within how pretty and beautiful Sunny is, but, like, how shamelessly Kip's dad hits on Sunny, his son's girlfriend, in front of the wife. It's just, like, I get that it's a joke, and, like, him saying Sunny, and then they even, like, become, like, oh, well, that's where he gets it from, you know what I mean? But, like have a little bit of tact, you know
right.
what I mean?
So, yes, exactly.
I wouldn't be surprised if he hit on Sunny, but the fact that he was doing it in front of his wife... That was right.
I'm gonna sort of humor Brian here for a second. Let's pull a high school slumber party, and not just this season, but the entire show. We're gonna rate it on a scale of 1 to 5. But what should we rate it on a scale of? Bosoms? How about on a scale of 1 to 5 Sunnies? How many times do you say Sunny? Rate the show within the scale of, like, sitcoms as a whole, but also just enjoyment. Because, like I was saying before, like, there were only a couple episodes where I was like, I'm really truly enjoying this show. I liked watching it, but it's not the kind of show where I'm gonna be like, oh, I need to go watch Bosom Buddies again. I don't know where you guys fall. So, like, if you had to rate this on a scale of 1 to 5 Sunnies, how would you rate it? Either within the scope of, like, sitcom history or just enjoyment. I'll give it, like, a 3 Sunnies, I think.
You're doing it wrong.
Sunny.
Okay.
Because I think it's more good than not good, but it's more good than great.
I'm going to say sunny.
3.5.
Yeah. You know, I've been away from sitcoms for a long time, guys. This is, like, really kind of making me curious again to go back and visit ones I liked, but also other ones. Like, I want to rewatch Wings now, of all things. Like, it's weird. So, like...
I love Wings.
It's not the best. It's far from the worst that I've seen, you know? I'd say this is, like, average.
So originally I was just sunny. But now I'm going to be sunny. Because if it made that much of an impact in your life, Mike, if it's a gateway for you to watch Wings, which I love.
It's a gateway sitcom.
It did its job.
You know, one thing I have not told you, I don't think, Brian, but, you know, after I catch up on some of the Netflix shows that I have started but have not been, not current on, one of the few shows that I'm going to watch this year for the first time is... Cheers. So,
that takes a
while. Speaking of dancing on the ceiling, I know there's a lot of it.
You see, the three you have to do is Cheers, Frasier, and Wings. Takes a long time, but they're all in the same universe.
All right, the next thing we're gonna do. If Tom Cruise were in this, the other Tom, if Tom Cruise were in this instead of Tom Hanks, how would season 2 have played out differently?
I don't think it would have played out much differently because. I feel like they reach a level of mania here and, like, things get so madcap. I think Tom Cruise's energy would play perfectly into this season. I think more so than last season for some reason. I think because of the physical stuff that they're doing, Cruise would get more physical and everything. You know, he's supposed to be Kip, right? Like, so if he was the Kip character, I actually think he would have been less loud when trying to, like, explain things to Sunny and later with Kip and his sister and things. I think he would have been a little more understanding as Kip this season, and I think he would have been just as big a fool and having just as much fun.
So yeah. That's sort of like what I said, because the first season you guys were like, I don't think this plays out as well, and I was like, I think it could be as good. Yeah.
I agree with that. This season certainly is more...
In the Cruise wheelhouse,
yeah. I think there's less of the Kip and Sunny melodrama in this season. It's more silly this season. And
silly.
Yeah.
If I ever meet Tom Hanks in person, it's so sad that the one thing I'm going to ask him is to say sunny into my phone.
I think he'd get a kick out of that.
I think if Tom Cruise was Kip, I just see the 60 Seconds Street being more successful. Like, I think that there'd be more of a focus paid to that, which again sort of rewrites the show, but I feel like it'd be more focused and it'd be more successful and productive in terms of that. And I think there'd just be more attention paid to building that. I think there could have been different kinds of elements, because it feels like Kip never really, again, it's a Kip character, so maybe it would be the same thing, but it feels like Kip never really cares about the business as much. Like, it's just sort of there as a reason for things to happen, kind of, you know what I mean? And I just think that could be a one little bit of a difference between Hanks and Cruise. All right, Mike, you said you wanted to Stanley yourself.
Yes.
How are you going to Stanley yourself into season two of Bosom Buddies?
So this is the weirdest thing. I've been thinking back, especially with Tom Club. I'm not sure if this was happening on Watch the Throne or not, but like, for some reason, I've been Stanleying myself as like very young. So like in the Outsiders episode we recorded, I was like, I'm a kid going up to get my bike tire, you know, inflated at the gas. I'm like, I'm not a kid. I'm like 40. Like, what? So I have to, and I think even in the previous episode of Bosom Buddies, I was like, I'm the boy in the mail room. It's like, I'm not a mail boy. Like, I'm 40. So I wanted to recast myself properly this time. You know, I'm definitely a client that has, you know, that wants a commercial made for a store. The only thing is, like, I have to figure out what my store, what I'm trying to sell there is, though. So I think I'm coming in there. I'm opening up a record store, right? DJ Mikester's record store.
Ooh, okay.
And I need them to make me a spot, okay? So I commissioned them. You know, I want to see what they got. Like, I want to see them dressed up, like, in the, like, the track suits, like Run DMC, wearing the big dookie gold chain behind the turntables and stuff, and like, that's, so I'm a client and I'm like, I'm opening a record store and
like that.
This is what I want.
Yeah, I think I was a client in the first one with Unreasonable Demands. You sound like a much more manageable client to deal
yeah,
with than I was.
I think so. Yeah,
definitely. Brian, what about you? If you want a walk-on role, or had to put yourself in a small part in Bosom Buddies season two, where would you inject yourself? Because remember, apparently all of the universe takes place in the Susan B. Anthony Hotel. So whether it's a high school reunion or what,
I would definitely be a high schooler who you saw in the flashback, and then I was also at the reunion.
Okay.
Nice.
You know.
So Steve Buscemi asked, how do you do, fellow kids?
Yes. That's what's funny, because, like, obviously they all look, I mean, it's part of the gag. They always look the same age, essentially.
Yeah, Scolari, I think they pulled off high school pretty well, though. I'm surprised, though, I didn't realize they'd be such opposites and yet such close friends. Like, a hall monitor and a class-cutting hippie. Like, I love
Maybe they weren't as close until they got to college and they were roommates or something. Did anyone look if that deaf girl was actually played by a deaf person?
I don't know. I didn't.
I hope so.
I would obviously Stanley myself into the Hildy Takes a Dirt Nap episode. I think I would be someone...
The corpse.
That would be the corpse. I would be someone who knew her tangentially, but was like overly dramatic about her being dead. Because like everybody in the room, it's like the agent and then everybody who's in on it and then the janitor or whatever, the Russian guy. And I just feel like it'd be funny if somebody else came in and was just like, oh my God, Hildy is dead. But like, we don't know who this person is, and they just show up and they're just like sobbing. So
I dig it.
All right, the most important question. Does Tom Hanks turn his head to the side and softly, silently chuckle?
I forgot to look for it.
I can't specifically tell you when or where he did it, but he had to have done it.
He moves so much that even if it was incidental, it had to have happened.
He does a couple of laughs direct. Like, he does a couple like, ha, 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 like a couple. He does a great Tarzan yell in this, but I can't tell you definitely if I caught it.
Okay. But I just feel like, you know, with the fact that there's 9 hours, like there's some, you know.
No, right. The law of averages dictates.
And again, he's
probably
moving so yep. much.
Cool. Okay. So we have an email address here on the show, hanks@cageclub.me, either HANKS or HANX. I put this offer out last week's Tom Cruise Club. If you email in, I will send you a prize. If you share your mailing address with us, we will mail you a prize for being the first person to email in to Hanks for the Memories. Hanks@cageclub.me. Say hi. We'll read it on air. Let us know what you think of the show. What episodes, what movies are you most looking forward to? What have you think of the first 3 episodes so far? Hanks@cageclub.me. We also have a Patreon page, which is a way to support us if you don't know a Patreon. I mean, so I guess there's 2 reasons you might be listening to this. Either number one, you love Tom Hanks and you just found this, or number 2, you heard us on another show, but we've done shows about Cage, Nicolas Cage, Keanu Reeves, Charlize Theron, Shia LaBeouf, different directors for Cinemakers, whole bunch of different shows. You go to patreon.com/cageclub and you can kick in a couple bucks to support us. And if you want us to go through every Peter Scolari thing, you can do that. There is a tier that you can control what we watch and talk about. So if that's something you want to do, please God don't. But if you want to, patreon.com/cageclub.
How much is that tier?
$100 a month.
Oof. It's going to sleep for me. Yeah. I was thinking about buying it and just... sabotaging the show.
We also don't really know, like, if somebody donates for 1 month and they're like, hey, do the Peter Scolari thing, which is going to be like a year-long project, we'll do it as long as you continue to support us for $100 a month.
Yeah,
like,
no, it would have to be
that. We got to figure it out.
But well, email us, hanks@keyshow.me. We'll talk it out. All right, so the last thing we have to do on the show here is the Tom Hanks Awards, maybe the Golden Lassos, maybe the Golden Volleyballs. This is the best and the worst of the Bosom Buddies. We nominated this last episode for Best Ensemble and Best Line. Sunny, 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 sunny. A lot of these don't really necessarily apply. Best or worst or most fun film. Best or worst Hanks role. I feel, again, it's sort of, I think without him doing it, it'll be kind of like a sort of down the middle kind of thing. I think he's adding to it, but I don't know if this is necessarily, it's probably closer to good than bad, I think, but I don't think it's necessarily one of his best.
No, especially his career.
Right.
You know,
he's good in it. It's fine, but you know, no one's talking about, you know, Kip Wilson nowadays, right? Like, they're not saying,
Wilson!
Oh, like, oh, that's volleyball. Oh, Wilson the volleyball. I wonder if that came up on set. What should we call this
Rita
thing?
Wilson too. So many connections.
Plus, this is like proto Hanks. I think I might have said that earlier on the previous episode. It's like he's trying so many things out on this show. Angry, manic, jealous, happy, nice, all this. I feel like over the next few films, he's really going to find himself and settle into, like, who he is.
Best fight, I'm just going to write down Protective of Sunny, just because it's probably going to get cut, but best dance scene. I mean, he dances a little bit, but there's nothing really...
They dance a couple times.
Oh, that was an awkward, no music slow dance at the end of that episode. But they do that weird dance in the hallway, is it? Or no, it's something when...
Oh, they like dance
well, they do the disco, the disco dance.
Yeah.
Who dances with Amy at that reunion? Because my Stan Lee is going to dance with Amy at that reunion. Just FYI.
Best Hanks outfit wardrobe? Not really.
Well, which wardrobe is it? Are we talking about the penguin suit or the new wave suit? I mean, there's some...
So we'll just say commercial costumes.
Because like I said, like they might not dress up as women a lot on this season, but they sure as hell dress up a lot this season.
Does not die. We already nominated the best line.
Almost dies three times, though. Does that count?
Best freak out. Now, this is something we talked about last episode. Do we want to nominate Kip and Sunny for worst love story?
I think after this season, yes. I want to get there. Because they can't even decide if they've had sex or not. Like,
fair. Fair. I can't fight it. I would have last week. I can't fight it this week.
And then we nominated again the ensemble for best ensemble, which is a new category, but best non-Hanks actor, male or female. I feel like they're all good, but no one really truly stands out as like...
The only person I think would officially would fit the category would be Scolari if he wanted to, but he's not going to make the final cut, let's be honest.
I'll say Peter Scolari. So, like, I wasn't thinking he was eligible because I was just combining the two for some reason in my head.
I'm interested now, though, because how many times has... I mean, there's Hooch in Turner and Hooch. There's Dan Aykroyd. That's funny.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Aykroyd, Sonny's husband.
Donna Dixon.
They have a movie in Dragnet. They do Dragnet together.
The guy who played the volleyball. I mean, Andy Serkis, it was the volleyball.
Right. So, like, I want to keep track of how many times he partners up with someone.
Well, we'll probably nominate Tim Allen as Buzz. But that'll do it for our Bosom Buddies. I mean, between the two episodes that we talked about it, we talked about it for 4 hours. We watched 19 and a half hours of the show, or 18 and a half hours of the show. If you listen to both episodes, you probably listen to about 3 hours of content. It's just, I joked last time, but we're the sort of the definitive source for Bosom Buddies opinions. Maybe not facts, but Bosom Buddies opinions on the internet, because there's a lot of it out there. But Brian, thank you for joining us. Tell people, if they're listening and they don't know yet, why don't you tell them a little bit about High School Slumber Party?
Well, Joey, Mike, as you know, Fridays are for fun. TGIF.
Hold on. T for T note for a second. I like that Brian he branded TGI Fridays and Fridays for Fun for the network without telling anybody. He's just like, this is who we are now. I'm like, okay, I guess this is who we are now. Like, I love it, but you just like put it on Instagram. I was just like,
I figured, you know, like, shoot first, ask questions later kind of thing. Rather ask for an apology than for permission.
Rather ask for forgiveness than permission, yes.
If anything, it's a joke. Like, you know, it's not a joke because it's very serious.
Fridays are for fun, but it's very serious. Serious.
No. Okay, so my show, High School Slumber Party, debuts on Fridays as well. So after you listen to this, because we know you're midnight listening to your Tom Club, Hanks or Cruise, if you're still up, there's another show on the network, My Show, High School Slumber Party. And we talk about films that take place in high school films, if you will. Let's see, what week is this?
So this episode comes out on February 8th, which means next week is our three-part crossover between Too Fast, Too Forever, High School Slumber Party, and third time's a charm. Yeah. But today is a very special episode.
Very special
with episode. My other co-host, Joe Two.
Yes, for the first time I have Joe Two on. And is it to promote our next week crossover? Yes.
A little bit.
A little bit, but it's a movie he really, really wanted to do. He is, and I dub him in this episode. I know I don't have dubbing permission, so I need to get your approval, but he's definitely the Lifetime film expert because he has watched a lot of Lifetime films. And he decided to do a Lifetime film with me called High School Lover. It stars James Franco. And it stars Lana Condor from the great film last year, To All the Boys I Loved Before. Before she did that, but...
I don't think I realized this came out in 2017. For some reason, I was thinking it was older.
No, 2017. Very confusing film. Very Lifetime film. But it's a hilarious episode. Maybe not a hilarious subject matter, but... We have a High School Lover this week, and next week is our huge Mondo crossover driving this beautiful, beautiful thing. Tokyo Drift, The Fast and the Furious.
Yep.
We're going to get the regular lap. We're going to get the high school slumber party. And then the third time's a charm version of things.
And then, Brian, coming up in April, and then again, I think either late April or early May, you're going to have both your 50th episode and your one-year anniversary.
Ooh.
You have anything exciting planned for those?
Not yet. Well, not anything I could let out of the bag.
You're going to have on John Cusack?
John Cusack.
Who's your dream guest? John Cusack or Julia Stiles?
Dream guest really would be Julia Stiles, but I would like to end my show with John Cusack.
All right. Well, go check out High School Slumber Party every Friday. Every week that a Tom Tom episode comes out, either this show or Cruise Club also comes out, is a High School Slumber Party podcast. So go check out Brian's return of his high school year. So pack your favorite jammies. Tell your mother you're sleeping over at Brian's house because you're about to get your party on.
And remember, Fridays are for fun.
Fridays are for fun. For all things Hanks for the Memories and Cruise Club and High School Summer Party and all 24 shows on the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, hanks@cageclub.me. If you email us and share your mailing address, we'll send you a prize. Go to patreon.com/cageclub if you want to, you know, create the Scolari podcast or just say hi or kick us a couple bucks or whatever. Next week is Losing It for Cruise Club. And then 2 weeks is Mazes and Monsters right here on Hanks for the Memories. And then in 4 weeks, from today. So after Mazes and Monsters, the next Hanks is Family Ties, 3 episodes that he was on. So we're going to do that. So come back in 4 weeks if you want more Hanks TV. But every Friday, Tom Tom Club, High School Slumber Party, only at cageclub.me. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Mancy.
And that was Brian Rodriguez of the High School Slumber Party podcast. And we'll see you next week for Losing It and 2 weeks for Mazes and Monsters right here on Hanks for the Memories.